Welcome to Your Family Dog, a podcast dedicated to helping families love living with dogs. Here are your hosts, Julie Fudge-Smith and Colleen Pilar.
Welcome to Your Family Dog. Julie Fudge-Smith and I are joined today by Teresa McKeon, one of the co-founders of Tag Teach, teaching with acoustical guidance. And she's going to be talking to us today about the principles of learning and how we can really help our learners be successful, whether it's a family dog or our children or our family member. So thanks so much for joining us today, Teresa.
Oh, well, thank you for inviting me.
We're excited to have you.
Yes, we are very excited to have you. Both Colleen and I have learned a great deal from you, and we're really hoping that our listeners will find you as informative and inspirational as she and I have. So why don't you tell us a little bit about TAG and how you came up with TAG?
Well, and I do want to write from the start, because usually at the end I bring these people in, but it is a company that I co-founded with Joan Orr. She does all of this with us, and she's an animal trainer up in Canada. So I just want to make sure that I put her name right up in the beginning this time. Terrific. And of course, yeah, Karen Pryor was also there as a content in the beginning, Beth Wheeler, a friend of mine. So I usually leave it to the end, but right up front, it was a co-founding. But the way I got into it was had a rogue horse. Well, I thought it was a rogue horse, and it was so big and so powerful, there was nothing I could do to force it to do what I wanted or to pay attention. And I couldn't even be nice. I tried, oh, please horse, do this. But there was no communication. Went online, found somebody who was doing clicker training, and of course got that aha moment within 5 minutes of using clicker training with my horse. And my day job was working as a gymnastic coach for high-level gymnasts. And I thought, this interesting mark, whether it's a clicker or a yep or whatever, this saying yes right away when you did something right, worked with them as well. And then Karen Pryor saw that, and it kind of went from there to, gosh, we work with orthopedic surgeons now and insurance companies, dog trainers, parents, children, because it's all the same, right? If we are not clear to our learners, they cannot learn, whether mm-hmm. we're nice to them or whether we're mean to them. It doesn't matter.
And we are firm believers in being nice to them, but being nicely confusing is really not any more helpful than being rudely confusing.
And it's kind of hard because you know they're trying to be nice and you still don't understand, so you feel foolish.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Being really nice, it must be easy. Why am I not getting this?
I remember when at the seminar I was at that you did, is to me what really drove it home, how powerful this was when you talked about the orthopedic surgeons. And how this was very complex, it was either orthopedic or heart surgeons, but I think it was orthopedic, very complex procedure that took a long time to teach until they broke it down into the various steps, the woof and tag. And I went, wow, now I can, it just really hit me hard how useful it can be to teach something complex if you break it down into the smaller parts. So you want to talk a little bit about woof, what that is, and how that relates to tag?
Right. So again, in my opinion, now if you talk to any of the people who do tag, they might think something else of it. But to me, it's about the teacher having a process of where we can go, okay, wait a minute. Let's take this step by step for my learner. So woof is a little bit of a protocol or a way to think about asking for what you want. So it starts with, what do you want? So often we look at things and say, stop petting the dog harshly on the head, or stop spilling the water when you put the bowl down, or any of these other things that we may have to deal with in a day. And what we really want to think about is, what do we want? How mm-hmm. do you want the child to carry the bowl? How do you want the person to pet your dog or stay away from your dog? You know, where do you want them to stand instead of too close? So, but that's a whole paradigm shift in our head. We have to really think hard as to what we do want. So that's the W. The first O is one thing at a time. We are such multitaskers that we say, stand over here, pet the dog gently, don't lean in their face, yada, 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 yada. Oh, and have fun. Mm-hmm. So when we are instructing for learning, we want to do that one thing at a time. The second O is for observable and measurable. And because we want to give feedback when learning, it has to be observable or measurable in some way so that we can either say, yes, you did it, or try again. If it's this nebulous, I need you to be nice, and you say you're not being nice, what did you mean by nice? What one thing did you mean? Mm-hmm. And the F in woof is for 5 words or less in the last instruction you give the person. So if you talk to them, that's fine. But then when you say, okay, do this, you give them a 5 word or less pet on side. Or mm-hmm. however, you know, something that's broken down into just a few words, because the person will carry that with them. Pet on side, pet on side, pet on side. Mm-hmm. If they're trying to carry, okay, I don't want to scare my dog, so I have to do this, blah, 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 blah. They're not going to carry that with them as they are learning a task.
So I think the woof is a really powerful tool. It's definitely changed some of the things that I do in training. And it also reminds me of the places I fail. And the big place I fail most often is one thing only. It's fascinating to me how often I fail at one thing only, but it's that concept, these 4 elements of what do you want? That's pretty easy for most of us to think about. We forget sometimes. And is it observable? That there's a lot to play with in there too, because so often we do have these really vague things. And can you get to the point and say it quickly? Okay. But am I saying just one thing? I'm giving you really rapid instructions on far too many things far too often. The whole point of, you know, use your left hand to keep your right hand out of the way, deliver the treat this way, you know, all of that kind of stuff. I'm so prone to that. Even this example right here of going through it, I just did way too much.
Well, you know, it's interesting because people say that my learners want to know the background. And I think that is important. But if it's at the moment of learning a skill, that's when you're going to ask them to do one thing at a time. Mm-hmm. So those components that we learn. And then you can take those components once they're fluent and start to put them together again.
And that for myself, I do want to know the background, but I typically want to know the background after I understand the behavior. So I'm taking a Pilates class right now, and I like my teacher very much, but she needs tag teach more than anything in the world because she says things to me that don't mean anything to me. Yes. Where she'll say, first off, she uses all of the body terms in ways that I don't, you know, anterior flex sat or posterior flex sat. What do you mean? And then she'll say things like, you know, you should be really arching from under the rib cage through there and just don't be stretching your legs. Like what the whole point was, push your legs out straight. She's like, yes, but don't be thinking about your legs from your rib cage. I don't get it. But later when I have the behavior, if she can explain to me why it was important, that will be interesting to me later. But yeah. Right now, when I still don't understand what on earth she's talking about with my rib cage, when the exercise is push your feet until your legs go straight, we do sometimes give people more information on background than they're really ready for that they could incorporate later when they understand.
Exactly. So I really think of it as if they understand the movement when you tell them the why or make it a deeper feeling, as they often say, once they have a car to drive, then you can add all the bells and whistles, right? Yes. It's hard to get the car started if you can't just put the key in. You don't want to know why the engine is combustion yet. Mm-hmm. So has your teacher asked you to pull in your core? Core? That's that whole curse of knowledge thing. They know. Yeah. We don't know yet.
And she's so sure that I understand what she's saying, and I don't. And I've been taking lessons from her since January, and this is very late October. So, and she's super nice. I'm trying to think of, like, find my own tag points where I could try to shape her behavior a little bit with, like, that's because truly I'm still very confused by her every week.
You know, it's so interesting.
Well, Colleen, I do have a question for you. Do you ask her? What do you mean?
I do, and I don't. Because there are six of us in the class, so I don't want to take too much of her time. So sometimes I'm like, I'm not sure. And she's like, a little more of this. And she does a lot of poking me as if that's helpful, you know. And she thinks it is, but she's like, lift from here. I'm like, no, that part doesn't actually lift. I'm so confused most of the time.
But when I've asked for help,
I like the class and I am getting stronger. So even with bad instruction, I'm doing well. But with good instruction, imagine what I could do.
There's the point right there.
Yeah, there's the point.
You're doing it with bad communication. Imagine if the communication was good.
And that's, I think, what happens with our family dogs all the time, is that our dogs are spending all of their time trying to figure us out. And we're spending very little time trying to figure them out because we assume they're getting it. They're like, they know what I mean. They totally know.
Yeah, they're just messing with me.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things I find when I'm working with people is it's a little bit harder in a group class, because sometimes I find if I can just do it individually and I can say, okay, this is what I'm doing, watch how I do this, then they get it. And I can demonstrate that for a class, and then I try to go around and help each individual student. It's much harder to give that individual instruction in a group class, and I don't have an assistant trainer, so that makes it tougher. But one of the things I have found is that when I can work with somebody, I have to remind myself, I have done a toss and treat recall thousands of times, thousands of times. And so I have to remember that's the one thing I actually am pretty good about, breaking it down into steps. Do this first, then do that, then do this, because it's a pretty easy process. And when I stop and actually walk them through every single step, they get it. So for me, the challenge is finding, how do I do that, one, on a group basis more, and two, I need to take the step back and look at all the behaviors I'm teaching in that same way. Can I put them into a series of explainable steps that are, this is what this is, show the dog the treat. Show the dog the treat. That's five words. I could do that one, right? Show the dog the treat.
You could even shorten it to show treat. Because those people probably know you're talking about the dog.
That's
you know,
true.
You're talking about it. And so you say, show the dog the treat. So your first step is show treat.
Mm-hmm.
Very good. Then it's toss treat.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And then it's, then the next one is click when dog gets treat. That I have to do five. And then say come.
That's right.
Click. When the dog gets to you.
Yeah.
Click when he arrives. Anyway, so yes, show treat, I like that. But yeah, you're right, because I'm not actually telling him to, you know, go over and, okay, see that guy over there across the room? Show him the treat, right? And throw it to your dog from that guy. Yeah. Very good, because the shorter the better. So, you know, you think to five, but it's actually five or less. The or less is a key part, so.
Well, you know, you kind of take your instructions and you are actually turning them into a cue.
Mm-hmm.
You don't say, okay, dog, contract your muscles and sit your bottom on the floor. You say, sit. And eventually they know what that means. So, and it's really good, Julie, that you said that you demonstrate. So when you do that demonstration with, what was the first step now again? Toss treat?
No, you show the dog the treat. Show treat.
Show treat.
Right, right? So the dog's looking at your hand. Then you toss the treat. Then the dog goes and gets the treat.
Right.
And then when the dog gets it, you click when the dog gets the treat. And then he looks at you and you say, Fido, come. And click. And then he comes up to you and you give him the next treat right up next to your body. So he learns that come means I'm a space invader and I get up right close to you. So it's a fairly, it's I have to work on the five words or less.
it'll behoove you. It really will. It's worth the time.
Yeah. And that's one that really lends itself well to demonstration. But but this was not all about Pilates and toss and treat recalls. This is really about how owners, and I think one of the things that Colleen and I have talked about, and I'm sure you have found this too, is we have the owners that talk all the time to mm-hmm. their dogs. And so the dog is just like, blah, 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 blah. And somewhere in there's going to be a command, and they may or may not hear it because there's so many words going on.
Mm-hmm.
So I think one of the things we can remember about tag is that it can, it, maybe we can't get them down to 5, but maybe we can get them to 50 or less. Because the whole idea being that less is more. That if you can clearly communicate something, and when they do it, reinforce it with a click and a treat, that you're going to get a lot more successes. So one of my challenges, I think, is getting people to understand sort of really the power of the clicker or the verbal marker. So have you found, Teresa, that the clicker really is significantly more effective than just a verbal recognition of what's going on?
You know, it really depends on what population we're using it with. If I am working with, say, a student using Pilates or a gymnast or a real finite physical skill where my voice has a tendency to go, good, good, good. Caveats to all of that. Or let me put it this way. If you provide the woof part, you almost don't need the clicker with humans because you have made it so clear. In fact, that's one of my policies, is I need to make it clear enough that my student can say, yes, I did it, or no, I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Unless it's a real fine upside down backwards skill. But if I said, when the dog looks at you, show treat, and the person starts to show the treat, they will either say, yeah, see, they looked at me, or, oh, wait, I showed it to them and they weren't looking. Mm-hmm. So it's mm-hmm. my policy that I am so clear that they should know whether they've done it or not. Now, that makes it easy as far as the click goes. Some people enjoy a marker, but the trainer has to be so good at timing, because with people, they will tell you if your timing is off, they hate the marker. Because it just, why don't you just tell me? It feels stupid. So you have to be so good at your timing. That's when it feels good. But not a lot of people have enough practice to be that good. So mm-hmm. that's when you can use either the word tag, 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 if they need it, or any other word, or be so clear that they can go, I did it, didn't I? Oh, I didn't do it. Let me try it again. It's interesting.
So the clearer the instruction, the more motivating it is as well.
Well, mm-hmm. yeah, because success becomes the marker. Right. They look at it. Oh, I did it. And there's nothing more reinforcing for humans who are at a training class than to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
I learned this by trying to hand out tickets and chocolates and money. And they would say, wait, let me just do this again. And then I'll take that chocolate from you. And I went, oh, wait a minute. What's reinforcing is the success that they are having.
Yeah.
That is the marker right. humans when I can use voice. Now, when you have population that maybe doesn't understand verbal language, then you go back to using something like a clicker as a mark for success, and it works very well.
Okay.
I've also found that the comprehension is reinforcing. So even when a client does it wrong, I sometimes see them, their face light up, and they go, oh my gosh, I treated before I clicked, or oh, I did this wrong. But you can see that they caught it, they understand it, and they know they didn't do it right, but they can identify exactly what went wrong because the information was so clear. And I'm surprised at how often they look happily at me when they do it, but they are. They're like, oh, darn it. And if we can make training kind of fun that way too, that's helpful.
Wow, that's such a good point, Colleen, mm-hmm. that even if they do it wrong, the fact that they understand it well enough mm-hmm. leave you, they can practice, has got to be exciting as opposed to leaving confused all the time. That's a great point. All right. I'll put your name beside it. That was good.
Well, good. So glad
that
I
was
could be
very
helpful.
Good. And I'm glad you said that, Colleen, because I was thinking about it. Yeah. I've seen that too. Somebody go, oh man, mm-hmm. I'm so close.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know? So, yeah, and I think that comes with clear instruction and a very clear understanding of the concept and what we're going to do. And just because I didn't do it doesn't mean I don't get it. If I can't do it because I don't get it, that's doubly frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, clear the communication. So, which also led me to take a look at some of my handouts and some of my... I follow up all of my classes with a very detailed email about everything that we have done, either in the private lesson or in the group class. And I realized that I was probably being a bit verbose, because that is my wont, in my emails as well. So it was a way of me having to go back and take a look at what are the instructions that I've, but the written instructions I'm giving to people, are those too verbose as well? And so you've inspired me this afternoon. We're going to go back through and relook at some more emails, because I can think of one in particular where I'm like, way too many words.
Yeah.
So good for you. Yeah. It was I don't know what you do for fun, Julie, but if I sent a big long email back to Colleen saying all of the things that I said in class that she didn't understand in class, and now I'm sending them back to her in an email, especially if it's in paragraphs instead of bullet points.
Mm-hmm.
So anything you want them to do,
mm-hmm.
put in a bullet.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I've really tried changing my notes as well. I'm at the very bottom level of Tag Teach certification, working toward my level one, I think it's called. And just at that stage, I'm so aware that my emails to my clients are different, which is interesting because I think of Tag Teach being the in-person interaction. But it is about clarity and getting to the point. Not my gift. So so it's an interesting thing to be really aware of what exactly is this busy person going to read and what do they need to know right now? And what is all the stuff that I'm telling them because I think it's important, but they probably don't.
Yeah, it's a real shift, isn't it? Once it gets to train, and that's why I say that the benefit is the student. But who this is for is really the teacher or the originator of the communication that's being delivered.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't matter whether you're in person. Always nervous around people like Susan Friedman and all these people who are so wonderful at looking at the outcome of what people do. And I'm always just stuck in the antecedent in the beginning, right? Yes, I want to see the consequence of their behavior, but I want to put it in that best light so that I could possibly get these great consequences. So I'm constantly looking at what I say in the beginning, hoping to get the behavior I want and that they want.
Right, because if they don't, but I think that that's really important though, Teresa, because you're not going to get the behavior you want if they don't understand what it is that you want. So mm-hmm. I kind of think that the antecedent is the antecedent for a reason.
Yeah. And really, more importantly, you're not going to be able to give it to them if you aren't clear about what it is. And that's why it's important right. that you all are saying things like, I'm going to go back and look at my emails. Am I being clear or am I not sure? So I'm kind of blending it into generalities. So mm-hmm. it's really important what you said.
Okay.
Well, that came up when my kids were little at one point. My husband told them to settle down.
Right.
And
right.
I noticed a big difference in their behavior between point A and point B. And then he turned around and fussed again, settle down. And I thought, because they just met my definition of settle down. And apparently they had met their definition of settle down, but they clearly had not met his definition of settle down. And again, we do this with our dogs all the time mm-hmm. with the communication of what we're trying. We have sort of a vague picture in our mind, but not very clear one, not really clearly defined for ourselves. What does settle down look like? Or what does, you know, greeting a neighbor look like? But if we can decide in our head, what does this look like? And then articulate it either, you know, obviously with a dog, we're not articulating it that way. But if we can say it to ourselves very clearly, what does a good greeting look like? A good greeting looks like all four paws remain on the ground and that the dog is interested in the person, but not mobbing them. Okay, that's still a little vague. So then come in tighter and tighter and tighter until we can pick which one piece of this are we going to look at. But that broad definition I just did is still more clear than be nice. So
one of the most interesting things I ask people is, you say treat when you have your dog's attention.
Mm-hmm.
And we can go for hours and hours and fill whiteboard upon whiteboard about what people think attention is. Well, when they look at me, when mm-hmm. their nose is facing you, when their eyeball meets you, and if so, why? You know, it's a great thing to ask yourself and ask your client and ask your child who's working with this animal, and ask, what do you expect of the animal? What is attention? Do this when you have their attention.
Mm-hmm.
Great one mm-hmm. to go into.
That's a really great reminder. It reminds me a little bit of, Colleen, what you were talking about, of Kathy Sadeo's SMART training, see, mark, and reward training, mm-hmm. which you could get very precise with. I mean, one of the things I work with owners whose dogs are, shall we say, overexcited or exuberant individuals, is that sometimes I'm like, you need to have a very clear idea in your head of what good behavior looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And so when the dog has a calm moment that matches that definition, you need to click and give it a treat. And so I think SMART training is a nice, no pun intended, tag to tag team, because it's a way to at least to get owners starting to think in that direction. If they can't get as precise as we'd like them to be, or precise as I ought to be with them, at least I can say, if you see a behavior that you like, mark it, reward it. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's sort of a beginning tag. I don't know, Teresa, what do you think?
Oh, you're right on. One of the first things we have people do is just walk with their dog and name behavior, call it the name game. And we'll just go, I don't know, he's not really doing anything. He's just sitting there. Okay, he's sitting, he's blinking, he's breathing, he's yawning, he's scratching, he's walking left, he's walking right, he's shifting left. And then all of a sudden they start to see the behavior that you want them to mark and reinforce.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really interesting how we don't see behavior until someone kind of helps us and introduces us to say, well, let me show you what I mean by behavior, all of these behaviors. And the same way with the children. My kid never does anything that's worth reinforcing. So we actually have them look at the child and go, walking, looking at me, and then just everything that's small, smiling, lifting their arms, sitting on their left cheek, sitting on their right cheek, you know, crossing their legs, all these things. And then people start to go, oh, I never thought of that, right?
Right. So
behavior dictionary expands profusely. And then when you say mark that behavior or mark a behavior, they go, oh, I've got thousands of behaviors
mm-hmm.
identify and mark.
Right, which I think is another reason why Colleen and I emphasize so much stress signals in dogs. Because when you begin to recognize some of the basic stress signals, then you start really watching your dog for behavior. And once you're accustomed to watching your dog for behavior and looking for, oh, he just lip licked. Oh, he just, you know, he just turned his face, or he, you know, he's no longer looking at that thing he was looking at. So now he's lip licking and he turned away. Now he's backing up. All these things are telling me that he's stressed. So I think you can sort of take it from both ends. You can ask people to start naming behaviors, but you can also give them behaviors that they can start to name, saying, oh, I see that behavior in my dog, and therefore I begin to recognize other behaviors. So I kind of think that it can go both ways. Whatever way it goes, what it ends up is an owner who's much more cognizant of the behavior that their dog is showing and getting an idea of when I need to help my dog out because he's having a hard time, or he just did really, really well, I can reward him. So
yeah,
I think that you need to sort of look at it in both ways. And that's what you're talking about too, saying, well, you know, he's not doing anything. Well, yeah, sure he is. Look at, he's breathing. Hey, that's a behavior. And he's not barking. So.
Yeah. I think I talked to Colleen before about this, but we have somebody who is working with their child and they have profound difficulties. And when they get into a crying fit, they said, I don't know what to mark and reinforce. There is nothing good. They scream for 30 minutes. And somebody brought up, well, do they take a breath in between cries? Yes. Well, they were literally caught this breathing in between cries and then expanded that behaviors until the cry stopped. But just some people are so brilliant when it comes to identifying behaviors. I thought that was. Mm-hmm.
And those behaviors can be built upon to become something entirely different.
Yes.
But we need to have a starting point, and there's always behavior. So when we're saying like there's nothing to like, there's something, find something. And we're not saying that for the rest of your child's life, you're going to be clicking for when they take a breath between screams, because if you click when they take a breath between screams, you will then be able to have longer and longer periods of quiet and build other things in there.
Yes. And that's what happened. That's mm-hmm. what, and they, mm-hmm. they used it while there was a child who had some night terrors. And they went in and this had been previously trained. The child knew what was happening. But when they were taking a breath in between cries, he would flash a little pen light. And it was just enough to start to, oh, I don't even know why it works. But within 20 minutes, the child mm-hmm. was no longer doing it. And within 3 nights was not having the night terrors anymore. So
wow.
more talented than I am are doing amazing things, capturing very small behaviors.
And in our yeah. show notes, we'll put a link to the episode. Teresa was on Unleashed at Work and Home with me, which is a different podcast. So we'll put a link to the Unleashed episode if people are interested in learning more about that situation.
That's great. That sounds great. Okay. Well, do you think, I think we pretty much covered the idea that the tag means teaching with acoustical guidance. Is that correct? And that one of the processes.
That was the original name, right? Yeah, that was the original way back when all we used was the clicker, and now it's come to mean more, right? Just identifying behavior.
Because you clicked it and reinforced it and it expanded, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then within that, we talked about WOOF, which is a process by which you can break down behavior step by step in order to be able to more effectively teach it. WOOF W stands for what do you want, so to clearly define the behavior. Oh, the first O was one thing at a time. So as you break down that behavior, you're going to start teaching it one part at a time. The second O means observable and measurable. So what you're looking at needs to be able to be observed so you have something that you can click and reward. And the instructions for how to do it for each phase should be 5 words or less. So that's a terrific guideline, and I think that's something that people can really easily incorporate. I think we should also put a link to Kathy Sadeo's book, I think it was that Some Things in Life Are Free.
Plenty in Life is Free,
Plenty
I believe.
Plenty in Life is Free, that's it. I always want to get that mixed up. Anyway, thank you so much, Teresa. It's been terrific talking to you. Do you have anything else that you would like to add that we didn't get to?
You know, if you could just take away that one thing, is start to identify more behaviors that you can mark and take them one thing at a time, that's enough for one podcast.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. That's right. Now, we don't want to do too many instructions in one podcast, right?
No, I've enjoyed it. Thank you so much for inviting me.
So, and Tag Teach can be used for all sorts of things. So, Teresa, can you tell people a little bit more about where they can learn more about Tag Teach?
Sure. You can go to tagteach.com and you'll see all kinds of links and separate pages where you can go and look at professionals, golfers using it, or orthopedic surgeons, or children with autism, or just plain old, I got to teach my child to click the dog. So just anybody who wants to communicate better. Also, we have a blog and we have free classes that you can take online and just learn more about it there.
Which is terrific. Thank you so much for sharing all this information.
Sure.
All right. Well, thank you, and we'll see you all next time.
Thanks for listening to Your Family Dog. Got questions? Interesting ideas? Colleen and Julie would love to hear them. Call 614-349-1661 or visit www.yourfamilydogpodcast.com to share your thoughts.